Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we're bringing you a special edition of the show, analyzing what the election results mean for agriculture. We're broadcasting from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting annual meeting in Kansas City. But first, here's this week's headlines. Senate Republicans elected John Thune to be the next Senate Majority Leader. The South Dakota Republican has a deep background in agriculture and has been a longtime member of the Senate Ag Committee. He will succeed Mitch McConnell, who led the Senate GOP since 2007. Thune disagreed with President-elect Donald Trump in the past and initially endorsed Senator Tim Scott for president. However, he has since worked to mend his relationship with Trump. In a recent Fox News op-ed, Thune said the Senate must be prepared to advance Trump's legislative agenda. He also vowed to make sure the Senate calendar allows for a quick confirmation process for Trump's appointees. Republicans secured a trifecta from the election last week, with Donald Trump winning the presidency and the GOP controlling both the House and the Senate. This week, we'll dive into what these results mean for agriculture. Michael Torrey is the president and founder of Torrey Advisory Group. He says the rural vote played a big role in this election.
I think President-elect Trump is somebody who understands rural America and the needs out there. I think he saw a huge shift of support there. And I think that's also a population that has had to directly deal with the government on a number of issues, whether it's environment, regulatory, economic. And so a lot of the things that he has said he's going to do in his next term will have an impact on them. There are a few things that I think folks are nervous about. But at the end of the day, I think rural America believes that he's the right person for them at this time.
Trump is likely to work on getting Senate confirmation of his cabinet appointees pretty quickly when he takes office. Looking at that ag secretary position in particular, what do you believe are some of the qualities or policy positions that President Trump will be looking for to fill this cabinet role?
Well, I think he's going to be looking for somebody who obviously understands agriculture and knows what the needs of farmers and ranchers and those that fall under the jurisdiction of USDA are. As far as whether he's looking for a lot of change out of USDA or not, as he is in some agencies, I suspect, and I don't know this for sure, but I suspect if you think about government reform, there'll probably be some of that that impacts USDA. What they need in a Secretary of Agriculture is somebody who is competent and capable and can walk into the Oval Office when necessary and make their case to the president and anyone else that may not understand agriculture on what our needs are and defend rural America. And we've had that happen before. Former Secretary of Ag Sonny Perdue did it when the former president or the president-elect was going to pull out of NAFTA, but he was a strong defender. So if I had to guess, the president-elect is looking for somebody that can speak clearly and know what they're talking about.
Trump's proposed plan to implement a 20% tariff on goods entering the U.S. and a 60% tariff on goods entering from China could prompt retaliation, especially from farm groups. How do you view the tariff threats, and do you think that President Trump will provide financial support for those farmers directly impacted?
Certainly there's been some challenges in terms of trade. There's some challenges looking forward in terms of farmer income. And so the president-elect and his team will have a balancing act. You're right, the last time this occurred, there was $28 billion in trade assistance, but I think everybody knows that when we think about spending opportunities going in the next year, we have a debt ceiling issue that they're going to have to address. They have the tax extenders that, dependent upon the numbers and the provisions, are anywhere from $4 to $10 trillion. We have a farm bill that it looks like we're going to have to pass. So in that environment of a lot of dollars being needed for a lot of the proposals that have been put forth, trade and tariff income will be one of those.
There's a GOP trifecta control of the White House, the Senate, and the House. How does this change both what's included in the farm bill and the timeline for farm bill passage? I mean, is this a situation where it could make more sense for Republicans to hold off until the next Congress when they have control of all the chambers?
I do believe there's a number of Republicans and Democrats that desperately want to get a farm bill done. What has happened to date is that the only way you pass a farm bill is you have to have legislative language and you have to have votes. And that only occurred once in the House Ag Committee, not on the House floor, not in the Senate Ag Committee, not in the Senate. So my guess is that with same party control of both chambers in the White House, it will be hard for them to not do that, to not introduce language and go through the committee process. I could be surprised, but that's how I think this will play out.
We'll be back with more from Brian Jennings with the American Coalition for Ethanol right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Brian Jennings is the CEO of the American Coalition for Ethanol. We asked him what industry can expect to happen with the Clean Fuels Credit guidance by the end of the year.
We wanted and we needed the guidance on the 45Z Clean Fuel Production Tax Credit months ago. Now that we're, you know, close to the end of the calendar year, the tax credit is by statute supposed to begin January 1st, where we have a lot of questions. We know USDA, under Secretary Vilsack's leadership, has been particularly aggressive and trying to influence Treasury to do the right thing and be flexible about how farm practices go towards qualification for that tax credit. But we don't know if we're going to get guidance from the Biden Treasury. So this could be handed off to the Trump Treasury Department. And then when any new administration comes in, what they typically do to rules that are about to be proposed or that are in the, you know, process of being proposed, they put a pause on everything. And that's a natural thing to sort of take inventory of the rulemakings that are out there that may have the unintended consequence of further delaying implementation of 45Z. No fault of the incoming administration, but it's just a concern that we have. And so we'll be looking at that very carefully. I would say one final thing that we're looking to do relative to the 45Z tax credit is it's a very short lifespan in statute. It's set to expire at the end of 2027. We know the Trump tax cuts expire in 2025. We know Congress, the Republican Congress, will use the budget reconciliation rules to extend the Trump tax cuts and do other tax cutting and other spending measures. And so we think there may be an opportunity to try and extend the life of the 45Z credit beyond its current expiration date. We know not everyone in Congress is wild about the IRA. We know some provisions are going to be repealed or rolled back, and some need to be to pay for the Trump tax cuts. But we think we have enough Republican support for the 45Z credit that we could make a run at potentially trying to extend it.
Trump's first term had pretty mixed outcomes for renewable fuels. From your perspective, what do you see as the future for biofuels under the new Trump administration?
Yeah, remains to be seen. You're right. We had some great success under the first Trump administration with respect to E15. He announced a rule to allow E15. It was in effect for a while. The refiners challenged it in the D.C. Circuit Court, and it was overturned. And really, since that time, we've been in this ad hoc sort of emergency situation on E15. The flip side of that coin is that the two administrators he appointed to lead the Environmental Protection Agency did some damage to the industry in terms of the small refinery waivers or exemptions that they issued under the renewable fuel standard. And so that's a concern to us as we look at former Congressman Zeldin being nominated to take over that post at EPA. Of course, as a Long Island member of Congress, he co-sponsored legislation that would repeal the RFS, that would prevent E15 from making its way into the marketplace. So that's additional reason for concern. But We trust that the Republican senators, particularly, that will have the chance to vote for him and meet with him one-on-one during the confirmation process, to ask the tough questions of him during his confirmation hearing, will try to get him to clarify where he will be, and we'll have to put our faith and our trust in them.
And as you led into my next question, Representative Zeldin, while in Congress, opposed the renewable fuel standard. Looking at his past history, what can we expect from him as an administrator, potential administrator, and from EPA on biofuel policy under the next administration?
The renewable volume obligations for 2026 and beyond are already behind schedule. The Biden EPA was supposed to move forward on that. They decided to pass the buck to the incoming administration. So it will be, if Mr. Zeldin is confirmed, it will be one of his first jobs to work with EPA to get out renewable volume obligations for 2026. And we believe for 2027, they may go for a third calendar year, but for sure 26 and 27. We want to see robust volumes with respect to that. There could be some things that they could do on E15. Here's what I'm most encouraged by and optimistic looking forward to under a Trump EPA, and that is walking back what we think are very impractical rules on automakers to essentially require them to make battery electric vehicles only, and hopefully looking at a more balanced approach that enables high octane fuels, low carbon fuels like ethanol to play a greater role in the future, perhaps even giving incentives to automakers to produce high octane vehicles or vehicles that are optimized to get better fuel economy on a higher octane fuel, or flexible fuel vehicles. We need to restore some opportunities for that.
And ending on a positive note, South Dakota Senator John Thune was elected Senate Majority Leader this week. How do you think his leadership will influence biofuel policy going forward?
What John Thune gets to do as Majority Leader is decide which bills go to the floor. He helps set the agenda. He won't be in charge of everything. And he won't always, he's not the type of legislator or senator that's going to sort of impose his will. He's going to do a good job of leading. But what it means is that we have someone who supports us, that has a seat at the table. When the big four meet, he will be one of those big four. When there's an Oval Office meeting about what legislation to move forward, John Thune will be in those meetings, and he is someone who supports rural America and ethanol, and we're really looking forward to that, particularly maybe to move E15 legislation in the next Congress.
We'll be back with more from National Pork Producers Council CEO Brian Humphreys right after this.
Elevate your game and set your sights on Denver for the 2025 Commodity Classic. With technology that moves faster than fluctuating markets and information as important as a million-dollar rain, Commodity Classic is designed for growers of all kinds, where you'll broaden your horizons as you improve yield and ROI one bushel at a time. Take your operation to new heights and join us for Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Don't miss the must-attend policy event of the year. Register now for the 2025 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Hear from the diverse players who are trying to navigate taxes, trade, and technology as we dive into what's ahead for food and agriculture. The summit takes place on Monday, March 17th at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. and through our virtual experience. View the agenda and register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Welcome back. Sonoma County, California, and Denver, Colorado saw ballot measures this year that would restrict animal agriculture. We asked Brian Humphreys, CEO of the National Pork Producers Council, about the outcome of the initiatives after the election.
Very excited to talk about these because we've had some struggles in the ballot measure issues in agriculture for a long time. And these were a couple of pivotal points, I think, for us. First, let's talk about in Sonoma County, California. The initiative there was to ban modern agriculture or confined animal feeding operations of a certain size and larger. And the whole community banded together. Political parties, farm bureaus, livestock groups, everybody banded together and pushed back against that. And at the end, the vote was 85% against the initiative. That means 85% of the voting constituency there stood with American agriculture, stood with livestock production, stood with local jobs in rural America. And I don't know how we can't be touched by that. I don't know how we can't be proud of how agriculture came together there. and really push back. And you've got to give some real credit to the local Farm Bureau folks, the local organizations there that led all of that effort. But at a national level, all the groups came together. And that's a great story. And we step over to Denver, a very different electorate and a very different issue. And there it was to ban the slaughterhouse facilities or the harvest facilities in Denver. And there's only one. And there, again, the local unions showed up. The Democratic Party showed up across the board. Folks showed up to stand up for livestock production and local jobs and local folks. And that one, 65% of the voting constituency voted with agriculture there. Again, overwhelming. 65% said no to what the extremists were trying to do there.
Should livestock producers be concerned about future local ballot initiatives surfacing? And if so, what can local producers do about it?
They should absolutely be concerned about it. Let's use both of these, Sonoma and Denver, as an example. A legislative body would have looked at these and sat down and rationally thought through the process and what they were talking about and pushed back. And that's why these groups are attempting to circumnavigate that and go to the local ballot. And we should always be cautious of that. We should always be engaged in those conversations and discussions. And I think we're as agriculture continues to work together, as we always have, we'll be able to push back against these. But for local groups out there and all the farmers in your area, it's important for them to pay attention to these and to watch what's coming down and how we organize and push back against these.
Another ballot measure, as you pointed out, California's Proposition 12 is still a concern for the pork industry. What impacts have you seen on pork prices since this went into effect?
Yeah, and we've been talking about this for a long time at MPPC, and I am sure some folks are out there thinking that we've got to be getting to a solution here, and I think we're close. But for the consumers in California, this is a big issue. It's a big issue for the pork industry, but for the consumers in California, bacon is up 21%. Price of bacon is up 21% since its inception. The price of pork loins is up 41% since the inception of Proposition 12. At a time when American consumers are frustrated about inflation, but the price of food, this is a non-starter. It is our job at MPPC and the rest of agriculture to stand up and try to get a solution to Prop 12, and that's the Farm Bill. And we've been very, very fortunate to have folks in D.C. A bipartisan solution came out of the House Ag Committee, and that has been a tremendous step forward for us. But we've got to continue to see the Farm Bill across the finish line here.
Looking ahead, we'll see a new Congress and GOP control of the White House, the Senate, and the House. How does this lineup make you more or less optimistic about passing a legislative solution for Proposition 12?
I'll be honest, our focus is to get it done during lame duck. American agriculture has waited long enough for a Farm Bill, and it is our push and our request and our expectation that Congress gets a Farm Bill done before the end of this Congress. Let's clear the slate. Let's start working on new initiatives and new efforts as they go into the 119th. But let's do everything we can to finish out the 118th year and get a Farm Bill that agriculture deserves. And as we move forward, there's other issues and topics out there that we all need to engage in. But our focus is getting a Farm Bill done quickly.
We'll be back with more from Luther Marquardt from the American Sugar Beet Growers Association right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. Farm Country voters carried Trump to victory in the election. We asked American Sugar Beet Growers Association CEO Luther Marquardt what changes agriculture may see from a second Trump administration.
Well, I think agriculture certainly supported the Trump administration, and I think they're looking at, one, getting a strong safety net. We have got to get a Farm Bill done. And if we can't get it done this year, it's got to be done early next year, because we've got to have a stronger safety net. These growers are now going to their bankers and trying to get operating loans for next year, and we all need a stronger safety net. That would be number one. Number two would be regulatory relief. We're seeing more regulations piled upon producers, and I think they're just saying, in order to be efficient, we need adequate tools to be able to grow our crops, and we're seeing issues at EPA and other parts of the agencies where we just need some relief. And as they look also at fuel issues, gas, diesel, all those expenses across the board have gone up. In the last 4 years, farmers' expenses have gone up over 30%. So anything that we can do to temper those prices as well as get us a stronger safety net.
The sugar program was under criticism from Republican think tank, the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 Blueprint. Do you have any concerns about the action the new administration could take on the sugar industry?
The sugar industry has obviously has a strong political connections all over. If you look at the leadership of both the House and the Senate, I think sugar's in a good place. And frankly, in the last Trump administration, we had serious problems with Mexico, and which we couldn't get essentially fixed under the Obama administration. But President Trump's team came in, and this is before they renegotiated the USMCA. They came in and fixed our trade problem. And both countries and both industries in each country are pleased with how that worked out. So I think we will have a very good working relationship with the Trump administration.
What do you believe are the most important qualities or policy positions that Trump should be looking for in that Ag Secretary position?
Well, I think you want somebody with a good amount of experience and understanding. When you look at the depth and breadth of what USDA has to cover and do, it takes somebody with a steady hand who understands the broad background of all of agriculture. And you've got to have somebody who can communicate well with the public. With agriculture being such a small population base now, part of the challenge across agriculture is we've got to explain to people in urban and suburban areas what we do and why what we do is important to them. And that's why I think a secretary has to be a very good communicator.
And as we know, Republicans secure control of the White House, the Senate, and the House. How do you believe this changes the timeline and what's included in the Farm Bill?
Hopefully, when you've got all those together, they can do something fairly quickly, but understanding after any election, there's lots of reorganization, both within the administration, both the House and the Senate. That's happening now. But in order to get the administration people in place, the Senate has to go through a number of confirmation hearings and votes on that. So it's a very busy time early on in the year. So if we can't get a farm bill done this year, which we hope they would, what are we going to do to bridge that gap to make sure farmers can get operating loans? But then how quickly can they wrap up a farm bill this next year? You've got all these tax provisions that are up for renewal. That complicates the agenda. So we've really got to get to work here.
Stick around. We'll be right back with a look at the week ahead.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Achieving excellence isn't easy. It's reserved for those willing to work for it. Farmers like you, who strive for bigger yields and better education. People who settle for nothing less than the very best, because you know excellence can only be achieved through hard work, commitment, and perseverance. Take your operation to new heights and join us for the 2025 Commodity Classic, Elevating Excellence in Agriculture, March 2nd through 4th in Denver. Learn more at commodityclassic.com.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Congress will be in session one additional week before breaking for the Thanksgiving holiday. USDA's yearly farm labor report will be released Wednesday. And finally, Sarah Wyant will be at the Sustainable Ag Summit Wednesday and Thursday in Minneapolis. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.